Welcome to episode 10 of All the Small Takes. I'm here with John and Cooper on this Sunday night. Guys, we made it to double digit podcasts.
Yeah. I think Easter is a great day to get double digit podcasts.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think it's probably more impressive for our listeners, for those who've made it through all 10 podcasts.
Yeah, we should do like a platinum star for those who've listened to all 10. But anyway, thank you for joining us for yet another week for the 10th episode. It is, as we mentioned, it's Sunday night. And we're watching. So we've got the Celtics-Bulls game going on live. We're doing a little bit of we got to break some news on this podcast because John is like 5 seconds ahead of my television and Cooper is like 20 seconds behind. So Cooper's very late to the party.
Yes, I am. Actually, yeah. Based off John's previous exclamation, I think I'm about 45 seconds behind. But that's okay.
So we're going to jump into some NBA topics this week because it is the NBA playoffs at long last, I think, for all of us. Cooper's Cavs survived a narrow victory on Saturday afternoon against the Pacers, and they continued the Cavs enigma. So Cooper, did yesterday's game do anything to alleviate your concerns about the Cavs, or did it make it worse?
I mean, a little bit. Their offense improved. Not that offense was really ever an issue, but they definitely seemed to kind of step that up a notch. I forget their exact field, like their percentage that they were shooting from the floor, but I remember at one point it was above 60%. So clearly offense is there for the Cavs. Defense is still atrocious. Yeah, I mean, I guess that last play, you can either call it lucky or smart, double-teaming Paul George and getting the ball in the hands of CJ Miles, who's actually been pretty ruthless against the Cavs all season long. I don't know. Defense is still a huge issue. I don't get exactly why Amon Shumpert didn't play. Derek Williams didn't play. A lot of players didn't play. It was a small rotation for the Cavs, which was kind of the opposite of what I was expecting come playoff time.
Right.
So, no, still very much an enigma.
Yeah, I think the Cavs got really lucky. The Pacers were hanging around, and then the Cavs never got rid of them throughout the game, and then they had the ball for the last shot, and there's really – I think it's really all the Pacers' fault that they didn't get that ball inside and they didn't score. They went ahead and double teamed Paul George, but the pass should have never gotten up to Paul George to set up that double team. I forget who passed it to him, but that guy should have just taken it inside and scored.
It was off the inbound.
But so the double team is interesting because there were some people who called out Paul George for passing out of the double team. But if you watch the replay, like he passes out and it immediately calls for the ball back, and he's in a position where he can get the ball back with time left. And not that there wasn't a good look that came out of it, but I don't know if it's right to say like that he – what's he supposed to do? He was going against a double team of J.R. Smith and LeBron freaking James. Like, I know he's a great player. I know he can get to the rim, but that's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, those are the best two defenders the Cavs are going to throw at you.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I do think – I don't want to jump the gun and go ahead and talk about the clips, but – there was kind of that same kind of scenario at the end of the game with the Clippers Jazz. Doc actually got asked about it after the game. A reporter had asked him if he, you know, should have bled out the clock a little bit instead of just getting an early shot and giving the, you know, ball back to the Jazz. And he said, no way, I take the points. And so that's kind of, maybe you can throw that out, the Pacers, instead of, you know, getting to the point where Paul George can be double teamed, like he's got to attack the rim. It's something that I think kind of blows my mind. Him and LeBron, they both just settle for shots. I don't get it. As a Cavs fan, streaming the game on my phone, and honestly, almost like destroyed my phone when LeBron put up that three with like 30 seconds remaining. It was just, he settled. He had got the matchup that he wanted, and instead of driving to the rim, which most likely 9 times out of 10, he's either going to get fouled or he's going to get the bucket because he's LeBron James and 6'8 and 250 pounds. And I think Paul George is kind of has that same ability, maybe not to the extent of LeBron, but Paul George is a player. He's a stud. He's got to take it to the rim. And I think, I don't know.
Yeah, I think the Cavs got lucky, and I think the Pacers are out of luck now. I mean, they had an opportunity to win a game on the Cavs home floor. It's not going to be easy to go in and win game two now, because I'm sure the Cavs are ticked off and they only won by one or whatever, but I mean, they have a game plan for winning. Now they just have to do it. And I'm not convinced the Pacers can. I'd love for the Pacers to pull off the upset for all the Hoosiers around here, but I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't know if lucky is the right word. The game was tight, but when you shoot 51% from a free throw line, you're letting the other team back in. I think that was, as a Cavs fan, I was most upset about that. how you shoot. The Cavs were 14 for 27 from the line. It's horrible.
It's hard to think they'll do that again in a seven-game series. And the fact that they were able to still manage to win that game, I don't know if I would consider that lucky as much as I would consider that the Pacers blowing a chance to possibly steal a game, because I think that it's almost a testament to how the Cavs can win even when they have just an absolutely abysmal night in a lot of facets of the game, like defensively and from the free throw line.
And so a three-point arc. I mean, I don't know. The Pacers shot at a higher clip from the three than the Cavs did, which I don't think is going to happen in a lot of Cavs games.
Yeah, I don't envision that series going more than five. So let's talk about the other game in the Eastern Conference from yesterday, one of the other games from yesterday. That was the Bucks-Raptors, and the Bucks stole a game from Toronto.
Yeah, I think the Bucks played great, and I wouldn't call this stealing a game. I think they won by 14 at Toronto. I think they pretty much went in there and showed them what was what. And if I were Toronto, I'd be scared coming into game two. Like something probably needs to change, because everyone on the Bucks showed up and they all played pretty well. I think there were a couple of guys on their bench who were in a negative plus or minus, but all of the Raptors starters are in a negative double digit plus or minus, like minus 16, minus 15, minus 14, minus 22, minus 16. It's bad. So they got to change a lot if they don't want to be swept in the series.
Swept?
Yeah, I think I don't know if I'm going to say that. The Toronto Raptors have, kind of consistently performed very poorly in opening round games of series in the playoffs and years past. I don't find this too surprising, especially kind of just looking at the matchups. I think the Bucks match up really well with the Raptors, especially considering the Raptors' points come from Lowry and DeRozan. Yep. And on the other side, you have Brogdon, who's probably, I will argue rookie of the year.
No.
Yes.
Come on.
Whatever.
Come on.
About, John and I have disagreements about that, but he's a great defensive player. And then you also have Delly. So you're going to have Delly guard Lowry for a large part of that game. And then you go to the Raptors, like, third guy or fourth, and you have Ibaka and Valanciunas who, like, they're going to have to match up with, like, Greg Monroe and things like that. So I just don't think it's a super good matchup for the Raptors.
Yeah.
And Giannis is a freak. So
Giannis is a freak. Yes. I saw a screen cap on Twitter yesterday of where he had a hand on the rim and a foot on the ground at the same time. That's not fair. But I agree. I think the Raptors snuck into that three spot that the Wizards were kind of angling for, which now makes it even more challenging for the Celtics in their road, because Celtics do not play well at all against the Wizards, and that would be their potential second-round matchup if the Celtics get there. But yeah, that'll be an interesting series to follow. Do we want to talk about the Jazz Clippers too? That was
A little bit. I don't really understand how the Clippers lose that game. I don't get it.
I mean, I do. They're the Clippers.
You take away
Did anyone expect them to win the series?
I mean, they're the higher seed.
Or any playoff series?
They're the higher seed, and the Jazz lost their best player 40 seconds into the game.
Their best player, who happens to be a big man, which happens to be
the Clippers' strong suit. The
Clippers can dominate you. Yes, exactly.
It's just time. Like, we keep saying Blake Griffin's a superstar. Like, it's time for him to actually kind of show us that he can play like that in the playoffs. I don't know. I don't know how the Clippers.
People forget that they
lost
were...
in the.
Go ahead, John.
Last year to the Trailblazers.
But then they were a game. They were a quarter away from the Western Conference Finals against the Rockets. They were up by double digits in the fourth quarter of Game 6 at home, and they blew it. And that was with Blake and Chris and everybody healthy. I don't know if Blake Griffin has to necessarily prove himself. I think that team is. I think they're aging a little bit. I mean, Chris Paul is certainly, and Blake Griffin, even though he may be young, has had a ton of injuries.
Yeah.
Well, just kind of looking at, like, DeAndre Jordan's touches, he only put up 7 shots. I mean, without Gobert in the game.
They should have been feeding him all night long.
Yeah.
And I think if the Clippers don't make it out of the first round, this team's getting blown up in the offseason. I think Blake will go. I think you might even see DeAndre get shopped around, because they've had so many runs at it with those core guys, and they've – to John's point, they've gotten to the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, they've never made it past the second round with this group. So, and yeah, maybe time to, if they can't make it if they can't make it past the first round this year, I think it's definitely time to think about flipping that reset switch. I think the Jazz and the Clippers actually came into this with the same record overall, 51-31. So if you're giving me a toss-up series like this, I would, and the Clippers are one of the teams, and I'd probably pick against the Clippers just because I don't trust them at all to close things out and win.
Yeah. We'll see how game 2 goes, because we'll see if they can adjust with Gobert being out for what seems like at least the foreseeable future, if they can adjust their approach. Well, the Celtics are going to lose. Isn't this awesome?
Yep. Yeah, you got 19 and a half seconds left, and it's a 6-point game. So, I mean, I don't know. The Celtics could just start fouling. And
with the way that we predict things on our podcast, you never know.
I never should have said what I said about the Celtics. God, bless.
All right, so let's talk. I'm turning this game off.
Okay.
I'm focused. Yeah.
Now the Celtics have lost.
I'm focused.
The Celtics have officially lost game one of the Eastern Conference playoffs to the Chicago Bulls, the 8 seed Chicago Bulls. Exposed.
Gotta ask.
And in the process, we're exposed for a lot of, I think, the shortcomings that we've talked about a little bit on this podcast, but I mean, I know you guys have some thoughts. So what went wrong for the Celtics tonight, and where does that put them for the rest of the playoffs?
When you lose a home game, first playoff game, it's a home game. What's the coach doing? Do you think the coach is on the hot seat now? You know, falling behind in a series to a team that's, you know, overmatched when you're the one seed. I mean, this is pretty embarrassing for the Celtics. They're a storied franchise. They got a lot of pride in between game one and game two. Get a little bit of new blood in there. Get the team going.
And then would you happen to have an ulterior motive of maybe wanting Brad Stevens to come coach at the place that you go to school?
Not really. I don't care about the basketball coach at the place I currently go to school. Besides, they just gave the coach a 6-year contract, so I don't think public universities can handle that kind of cash.
But private ones sure can. Shout out!
Oh yeah.
But anyway, back to the topic at hand. Against my better judgment.
Okay, so I'll give you a little bit more content than I think what John gave you, which I don't even know if there was actually any substance in that commentary. So. Yeah, I think part of it is just game one is the first game of the playoffs. So that's something to keep in mind, as well as all the Isaiah Thomas stuff and what's going on with the death of his sister. It's definitely affecting the team.
Yeah,
I think another aspect is the Bulls underperformed this season incredibly. I think they probably expected to be a 50-win team, and they didn't meet those goals. They're a talented playoff experience, team. They have way more playoff experience than the Celtics do. And they also perform exceptionally well. You know, on nationally televised games, especially at home,
the weirdest
on Thursday night when they're televised by TNT. But yeah, so I think part of it's that. And then lastly, I think the Celtics are world peace away, and I've kind of been saying that all season long. Isaiah Thomas is a great player, probably one of my favorite players in the league. But Al Horford cannot be your second best player on a championship winning team. Not in the league today. Just can't.
Yeah, I think the Bulls are kind of a faux 8 seed. I think they've got the talent level definitely of a 6 or a 5 or a much stronger team. And they kind of underperformed, and Boston just found that out in the first game. It's a 7-game series, and the NBA is designed to be a war of attrition. And the Celtics certainly have the better team, and they're going to win.
The only thing I think with the Celtics is, this is the dark parts of my brain that are coming out now, not the bombastic Boston homer. They're not a real one seed. Like, I'm okay admitting that, because they won, how many games? Like, 50? They won, the fewest games of a one seed in the Eastern Conference, and that has happened in a long time. They're missing a guy, clearly, and that was the reason they were linked to Jimmy Butler and to Paul George and to
Durant,
obviously, they made a push for him over the summer. But, yeah, I think, realistically, they're probably a year ahead, because they do have the Brooklyn pick this year, which is going to be could potentially be the number one overall pick. And then they have some place to make a free agency, too. So I think this was a year early. This is now me rationalizing. We're going through the stages of grief live here on the podcast. Because, I agree. They're missing that guy. And John, this is something you've mentioned before. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me why, at the deadline, when the Sixers were clearly willing to, literally give away Nerlens Noel, why the Celtics didn't make a push for a guy like that. Because right now, Al Horford is, their anchor inside, and he's not that kind of guy.
He did not hold up well against Robin Lopez tonight.
No, he got exposed by Robin Lopez, which is, Robin Lopez is fine, but... I don't know if it was they didn't want to make a deal with a team in their own conference, or if the asking price was real higher, but for the price they gave Noel away to the Mavs, I have to think the Celtics could have spared a draft pick and made that happen.
Yeah. I think it's kind of hilarious to witness this Boston agnosticism, There's all the bombast about how we're going to win the championship, and it's like, oh, well, we lost game one by 4 points, so let's pack it up, let's get ready for the draft. Let's talk about that for a second, though. Number one seed in the Eastern Conference, going to have the number one overall pick in the draft.
Yeah.
This is insane. It's ridiculous. It's not fair, especially when some teams in this league have been working very hard to get that number one overall pick and slaving at it.
Slaving at it? Is that what we're calling tanking at this point?
It's a process. It requires dedication and fortitude. Not everyone can master it. Just go look at the Kings. You know they don't have the intestinal fortitude like the Sixers do. But yeah, this is just not fair. But I think the Sixers definitely had to have been thinking ahead. Hopefully they're looking to be contenders, and they don't want Nerlens to be in the same side of the bracket when they start off each year.
It's a very valid point.
Either that or Danny Ainge is just the biggest skinflint in the NBA. That he would spite his potential championship hopes just not to give another team a draft pick.
Hold on, can we find a Webster's Dictionary definition of that, please?
Use it in a different skinflint sentence, please.
Yeah, can you use that in a different... Yeah. Can you give me the language of origin?
My fiance called me a skinflint for not paying for the drinks at the wedding.
Which means you're cheap.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Penny
pincher. Yes, a person who spends as little money as possible. Scrooge. A miser. Synonym. Minor, penny pincher, Scrooge.
Perfect. Thank you. Penny. I appreciate that.
We entertain and we educate here on the podcast. All right. Is that enough NBA talk for me?
That's enough NBA talk. All right.
That's more than enough NBA talk for me.
Yeah. We'll move on to a couple segments that we've got teed up this week. We'll bring it back. One that we've only done once before, back to our second episode, I think, second or third episode. That was the Hot Take Time Machine.
Fan favorite.
And we're going to do a little bit of a twist on it this week because the NFL draft is a couple weeks away. And we're going to do the Hot Take Time Machine on draft picks. So each give a draft pick that we would like reversed and maybe a pick that could have happened in its place that would leave a team better off. And we'll start with John.
All right. So I'm going to be focusing on the NFL because the NFL draft I'm more familiar with in terms of history and context than the NBA draft. And the Major League Baseball draft is just a it's an otherworldly beast where everyone, it feels like they just throw darts at a dartboard. They're like, I don't know, this kid could be good at baseball. Who knows? We'll take a chance.
Got a lot of darts, too. They've got so many darts.
So many darts. It's like 95 darts. Third round of the 2012 NFL draft, 75th pick. Russell Wilson was taken by the Seattle Seahawks. The Philadelphia Eagles had the 76th pick, and when Wilson went off the board, they traded down to 88th and then drafted Nick Foles at the 88th pick, and Nick Foles was the next quarterback to go off the board. The Eagles had Wilson at the top of their quarterback board, and they were planning on taking him with a late rounder and then developing him. So my otherworldly thing is Seahawks pull a classic Pete Carroll move and draft someone who's not good at football for whatever reason, or does something nonsensical and idiotic and then alienates their players with it. And don't draft Russell Wilson. The Eagles snatch him up. Andy Reid gets to develop him. We never do that bizarro land Chip Kelly experiment in Philadelphia. So the Andy Reid era continues onward, and the Eagles win their first Super Bowl. I also have an alternative one, if you don't like that one. Brady Quinn was drafted by the Browns, as everyone knows. And the next quarterback off the board was Kevin Kolb, also taken by the Philadelphia Eagles. As everyone knows, Brady Quinn was completely ruined by the Browns. His talent was squandered by them. They didn't appreciate it at all. And he was one who takes a snap in a Browns uniform is they're permanently stained by the experience, and they cease to be good football players or even know how to throw the ball or make any, you know, basic decisions with the ball in their hands. So Brady Quinn has saved that trial, is instead drafted by the Eagles. And as Andy Reid is getting ready to transition Donovan McNabb out, he brings in Brady Quinn, who's been sitting on his bench and has been learning the trade, much as Aaron Rodgers did in Wisconsin. And Brady Quinn takes over for the Eagles, picks up seamlessly from Donovan McNabb. We either continue to go to NFC Championship games every year and win maybe one every five, but eventually we make it to the Super Bowl, and eventually we win, And Brady Quinn is enshrined in the NFL Hall of Fame and becomes the latest Golden Domer to make it there. Go Irish.
Can I just point something out very quickly? So I get a lot of crap on this podcast for being the most biased homer. And I think that John accuses me of that to deflect. Because that entire spiel was the most homerific segment I think we've ever had in this podcast. Because it checked all the bubbles.
Check the Pete Carroll bubble, too.
Check the Pete Carroll bubble. Pete Carroll, Philadelphia, and Notre Dame.
Got them all.
It's the Holy Trinity.
It's the Holy Trinity. There's nothing wrong with it. Go Irish. Beat SC. Trojan stink.
Jet fuel can't melt steel beams. All right. Cooper, what is your hot take time machine?
All right, so I'll go through my first two really quickly. The Bengals in whatever draft drafted Jeremy Hill instead of Carlos Hyde, and they went kind of back-to-back, and Carlos Hyde ended up going to the 49ers. And this is kind of maybe, you know, unnecessary because it's not like Carlos Hyde has had a significantly better career than Jeremy Hill. But I think that he has shown in the NFL that he is probably a better NFL running back. And the Bengals, I think during Jeremy Hill's career, have probably had a better offensive line. And then, of course, Jeremy Hill cost us the playoff game last year. So, or 2 years ago, I should say. So maybe not drafting him would have been awesome. The Browns, I think my classic Browns draft mistake is trading up to get Trent Richardson. If I could go back in time, they would not trade up to get Trent Richardson and would just draft anyone else in the 2012 draft. Because he was drafted number three in that draft, and turned out to not have the most impressive career. But really, this has nothing to do with the draft. I really wish the Colts would have invested in their quarterback before Peyton Manning decided to leave. Because then what happened is they, you know, decided not to really invest in Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning went to the Broncos and ruined Tim Tebow's, in my opinion, promising NFL career. Because the previous season he had actually pulled a pretty awful Broncos team into the playoffs and beat a pretty impressive Steelers team, even though he had the worst completion percentage in the NFL among all 32 quarterbacks. But this kind of gets to, I think, a very important draft conversation. As a fan, I don't look at all these intangibles that scouts look at. And sometimes I very much question how much influence people like Mel Kiper have on the draft, who say that certain players do not have the potential that others have. And to me, it's very hard to look beyond anything other than wins and success on the field. And Tim Tebow, despite his unorthodox throwing mechanics and his horrible completion percentage, won games both in college and in the NFL. And to me, that's what sports are about. So if I'm the Browns this year, I don't get why we're considering Mitch Trubisky over Watson. I don't get it. That Watson, to me, was by far the most impressive quarterback in college football. And I think that's really all that should matter.
I think that's a very good point. You look at through history and those countless examples. Russell Wilson's like kind of the perfect example. Like the guy flat out won at Wisconsin, even though he was small, didn't have a great arm. Jameis Winston, as much as he has his flaws, won at Florida State. And now he's one of the better young quarterbacks in the NFL. And then you look at guys like, who's the dude for the Jaguars?
Blaine Gabbert.
Blaine Gabbert is a perfect example, but not the guy I was thinking of. The other Jaguars.
Oh, Blake Bortles. Shout out to my brother-in-law. We finally talked about Blake Bortles. He has been nagging me to bring it up, and I have sworn off bringing him up for any reason. I'm glad you did it, Jeff. It was very organic.
It was. All we had to Bortles, do was talk about underachieving quarterbacks. Gabbert and Bortles like came from pretty nondescript college careers, but had all these like they fit the physical build and they passed all the like the tests of arm strength and like at some point like guys who win.
Yeah, Carson Wentz. You want to talk about winning? Let's talk about North Dakota State.
See, that's
he won a lot in college.
That's an okay example because I think Carson Wentz's chance to turn out okay.
I think he does too.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's like an all-world quarterback, but he kind of flattened out at the end of this year, but I think, you know, he is got a chance to be at least as good as Andy Dalton, I think.
Right.
You know?
He's not
I mean, I don't disagree.
Andy Dalton's not a bad quarterback. He's just not like no one's talking about Andy Dalton as, you know, elite or, you know, a lock to be a Hall of Famer, but
yeah.
he's a good quarterback who's started in the NFL for like almost 7 years now, I think, right?
Yep. Yeah. So it's a very, very good point. Good point, Cooper and John. I'll do mine really quickly because mine's a little less serious. So my New England Patriots, as is widely known, drafted Aaron Hernandez back in the 2010 NFL draft in the fourth round. Aaron Hernandez definitely killed somebody, and I'm going to say definitely killed at least two others, even though just this week he got off on
Charges. Kill the NFL for a pretty, you know, for a good while. He was doing a pretty good job in the NFL.
Yeah.
Until he committed lots of crimes.
Yeah, until it turned out he was actually a horrible, psychopathic human being. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I was looking at the guys who were drafted behind him in that draft, and there's a lot of good names here. You've got Dennis Pitta, who was taking the pick after. He's a tight end. Perfect. Geno Atkins of your Cincinnati Bengals, Cooper. But the one that jumps off the page to me is in the sixth round with the 195th pick, the Pittsburgh Steelers drafted Antonio Brown. Oh, and if the Patriots...
Yeah, oh, that's not fun to think about. Tom Brady throwing to Antonio Brown.
I'm convinced the Patriots would have not lost a game between 2010 and now if Antonio Brown was on the team.
But would he still be on the team?
He's still on the Steelers.
I think it...
Yeah, would Bill Belichick have been okay with him, you know, posting all the Snapchat videos? And
it wouldn't have even happened.
I think culture, he would have been maybe. Cut. I think Bill Belichick would have just cut him, and then he would have gotten picked up by some team willing to blow a ton of money on a wide receiver, probably the Cowboys.
Probably, yeah. Probably the Cowboys. And Tony Romo might still be in the league, and it's the ripple effect, the butterfly effect, as it were. So, yeah, that's my hot take time machine, because Aaron Hernandez is kind of a stain on the Patriots, and I'd rather that not have happened. But anyway, yeah,
Forget about cheating, institutionalizing cheating. I think that's also a stain on the Patriots.
I'm not sure what you're talking about. Last segment is the one up, one down. This is another one that we introduced a few weeks ago. It's pretty simple. We're just going to give one thing that's up this week and one thing that's down. We're going to leave it pretty open-ended. Why don't we all do our – let's do our downs first, because last time I think we did our ups and then our downs, and it was just sad.
Let's start with a positive.
I'm already sad. Sad. So we'll start with our downs. Let's bounce around the downs, and we'll start with Cooper.
Okay. I had two downs this week. I guess I'll just stick to one because I think John's going to kind of hit on my other one. The NHL playoff format makes no sense to me. I don't get how – and I know close to nothing about hockey. But I do know that in the first round of the playoffs, you probably shouldn't eliminate two of your top four teams in the whole entire league. That makes no sense to me. So I don't really get how Pittsburgh and the Blue Jackets end up playing each other in the first round. I get this whole division thing, and we're trying to create all these, you know, artificial divisional rivalries between two teams. But the point of the matter is that they're two of the top four teams in the whole entire NHL. They should not be playing each other in the first round because in the playoffs, you should see the best teams later on. And it's just the NHL isn't giving that to us.
Should have cut in with some breaking news. The Penguins won game three in overtime. So it's now 3-0 Penguins. So the Blue Jackets, in all likelihood, will get eliminated. All right, John, what's yours? What's your down?
My down is similar to Cooper's. It's the NBA playoffs. As we were talking about before we came on, the regular season obviously doesn't matter. So we can throw out roughly half of the NBA schedule because they play 84-game regular season, right?
82.
82-game regular season, and then they play an 84-game postseason. So, you know, the regular season doesn't matter. So cross off that whole part of the schedule. And then as we were talking about, the first 43 minutes of NBA playoff games don't matter at all either. Go ahead, don't tune in. Certainly don't record it. Maybe just put an alert on your phone so you can kind of guess when the last 5 minutes of the game is going to start so you can tune in and actually see basketball being played, because everything that happens beforehand is like what's been going on with this Thunder Rockets game, which is guys jacking up threes from ridiculous angles and totally missing and no one playing defense. It's garbage ball. It's garbage ball and garbage time. And this is again, a factor of, I think, overvaluing these marathon long postseasons that have become odes and songs to generating profits and driving up TV ratings and trying to build, you know, epic storybook matchups instead of just connecting with communities and having fun.
So my first inclination is to always argue with John. But I think this is one where I actually kind of agree with him. I will say that the NBA is, you know, pretty successful in driving up TV ratings, unlike the NFL and things like that. But I do kind of agree. I'm very disappointed with these first, and I know it's super early in the playoffs, especially because it is, according to John, 84-game postseason. Maybe we shouldn't, you know, over-evaluate. But defense was bad. This is, you know, the time of the season when playoff defense is kind of, you know, we take a step up from the regular season. And even teams like, I mean, I'm looking at the scores today where three out of the four games, or one's currently being played, and it's looking like it's going to go over 100 points. All the games, both teams scored over 100, and I'm looking, you know, kind of specifically at that Golden State-Portland game, 121 to 109. It was kind of like Golden State decided to play defense in the fourth quarter. Portland had scored, what, I think like 90 points heading into the fourth quarter, and then Golden State decided to start guarding Lillard and McCollum. So, yeah, I kind of agree. I think playoff defense has been kind of especially disappointing.
I think you'll see that change. What's in our minds is what, like, was most recent in the playoffs, which was the NBA Finals last year. And obviously that was, like, A-plus defensive effort for 48 minutes. This is kind of typical of the first round. And I think you also got just a lot of good offensive players in the league right now, which might be inflating some of the scores. So I'm not too concerned that we're going to have a defensively lacking NBA playoffs. But my down is also kind of a sneaky up because I hate this team. The Chicago Blackhawks are down 2-0 to the Nashville Predators. Shout out the Preds, and shout out to this matchup like happening for the sixth year in a row in the first round. But the Blackhawks have not scored a goal. And they're in trouble. And these were two home games too. They had home ice, and now they're going back to Nashville down 2-0. The Preds, as I said, this matchup's happened like 7 years in a row. The Preds have lost all seven matchups, so maybe this is the year.
And yeah, so, little known fact: the Blackhawks actually thrive off of that annoying, idiotic song they play whenever after they score goals. So when the cycle is broken, their power is totally killed.
Science. All right, we'll run through the ups really quickly.
Okay, what was my up? Oh, baseball craziness. There we go. So, early season baseball craziness. I think first, what are we like, 2 weeks now?
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks of baseball has been, I think, fairly crazy. And I've actually been, I didn't talk about it last week on purpose. The Reds are in first place in the NL Central. And now that I have officially said that, they will, I think, continue to go back to the norm and fall to last place in the Central by the end of the season. But yeah, I think this is just the time of the year where baseball teams kind of, it doesn't really make sense. Like the Central, for example, you had the Reds and the Brewers in first and second. The Cardinals are like 3-8 or whatever in last place. It's just that time of the year, and I'm trying to advise everyone not to overreact.
I think so. The all the small takes curse has been well documented. But I'm going to have to say that if the Reds do regress, I'm going to say that's not on us. I'm going to say that's on the fact that they're basically trying to lose 100 games this year.
Yeah.
Did you guys hear that the Phillies scored 13 runs in one inning against the Nationals the other day?
I think you might have told us that like 15, 20 times.
And that was an evergreen, John.
I think we're on a six-game losing streak. Actually, no, we broke the losing streak last night, but we just started it again today. So go Phils.
I'm going to chalk that one up entirely to the All the Small Takes curse.
Yeah. So side note real quick. Do you guys know what the minimum number of NBA playoff games is?
Like for one team?
Total.
No.
56. You know what the maximum is?
Just tell us.
105. The average is 80.5.
Wow.
Pretty close.
I love those half game.
Wasn't that far off.
Games.
Yeah, half game NBA playoffs. You got to boost the ratings. Just got to drop in a half a game into the New York market. Just get the numbers up. my up is, of course, Notre Dame football. It's new look, new feel, new Brian Kelly. He's lost 15 to 20 to 40 pounds, depending on what news article you read. I don't know why our head coach's weight is being publicized, but it's a big deal, apparently. Anyway, from everything you can hear and see, there's a lot of optimism going on in the Notre Dame camp. Our starting quarterback has not been injured / suspended for academic violations / anything else yet this year, which is huge. So barring that, it looks like this Notre Dame team is going to be a good team, a team that we would expect to come out of college football program in the country, historically speaking. Maybe not of late.
Just a question of clarification. Has there ever been a season where Notre Dame football fans are not optimistic? about the next year of football?
Wait,
yeah.
I'm a Notre Dame football fan?
Yeah, 2008.
Okay, 2008. Good to know. Yeah. I'll write that
not,
one
not
down.
Not a very optimistic year that year. Write that one down. Also 2009. The last two years of the Charlie Weiss era, not a lot of optimism floating around there.
I'm just confused why it's taking you this long to reveal that you're a Notre Dame fan.
Oh yeah, no, I know. I've been kind of keeping that close to the chest, trying to be professional.
Okay, I'll wrap up with my up really quickly. Is Mike Breen, who calls NBA playoff games for ESPN, and I think he's sneakily one of the better play-by-play guys in really any sport. I love his signature bang. If you just look it up on YouTube, there's a great montage. There's actually a top 10 I was watching before this podcast of Mike
Breen. Does a little bit better than Jeff does.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll have to excuse me. Look it up yourselves. It'll be better than what I just described. But yeah, he's a solid play-by-play guy. And when they put him next to Van Gundy and Mark Jackson, it's a pretty good pairing of announcers. So we have that to look forward to for the next 80 and a half games. Not quite, though, because ESPN doesn't have all of them. Anyway, we'll move to the last segment that we end every episode with, the waste of data. I think this week, some of us might have, I know I personally have a bit of a twist on it, a little more of a positive spin, but we'll start with John.
My waste of data is Alexi Lalas for not tweeting us back ever. Please tweet us back.
Alexi's conserving data, and we would like him to waste some of it on us.
Please waste some of it. You're not wasting enough.
In our DMs, please. All right, Cooper.
Okay. So I guess my first one, and neither of these are wasted data. I'm just kind of sticking to the positive. I've been pretty negative the past couple of weeks. So my first one, Antonio Brown's Instagram post about Dan Rooney passing away, I thought was very, it was very touching. And it was just kind of one of those moments where kind of showing how some things are much bigger than sports. And kind of sticking on that theme. My other one, I have no data to represent it, but just kind of everything that's going on with Isaiah Thomas and his sister passing away. I think that is, it's one of those times where we kind of, I think, take athletes for granted, and we kind of think of them as superheroes, or at least I kind of do, and kind of to realize that they're not, and that life happens to them too. I don't know, I just think it's kind of, this week is, especially for me, kind of just been a week to kind of reflect on that, and how much kind of like sports matter, I think, for all of us.
Yep.
Charles Barkley said, watching Isaiah Thomas cry over his sister made him feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, so I was watching that. It wasn't like a bad uncomfortable. He was just saying that he's kind of, you know, alluding to the fact that, you know, things are bigger than basketball, and there's no reason why Isaiah should feel like he has to force himself out on the court. Because Isaiah was super emotional before the game.
Yeah,
he was basically saying, like, hey, dude, if you need to take the night off, like, take the night off.
Okay. Props to Charles Barkley.
Right. And on that note, I'll jump into my waste of data. And I had one negative one, which was, and then one positive one. I'm just going to stick to my positive one. The negative one wasn't that great anyway. It was just some ESPN clickbait, and they don't deserve our airwaves. My positive, on a much less serious note than Cooper's, there was a Notre Dame student who ran the Holy Half, which is a half marathon that's run on Notre Dame's campus each year, and drank one beer, shotgunned one beer, or for our younger listeners, one soda, per mile of the Holy Half. So if you're counting at home, that's 13 soda beers. I'm not sure which would be worse as I think about it, shotgunning 13 sodas or 13 beers and running a half marathon. But anyway, the best part of this whole thing, so if you search it, it was Sports Illustrated put it out on their website earlier this week, but the kid ran it in an hour and 45 minutes, which is like a crazy good half marathon time. And the video, he had a GoPro on the whole time. The video is like 10 minutes long. It's absolutely worth your time. It's always good to see folks from our alma mater doing well. And I would say this kid did pretty well. I don't know who he was. He's also of age. Just want to clarify that. He is a senior. So that was pretty cool. All right. That's the show for the week then. We thank you guys for tuning in for our 10th episode. Thank you for listening to any of the episodes beforehand. If this is your first, if this is your 10th, we appreciate you listening and you letting us entertain you, hopefully. If you have any feedback on this episode or any others, you can find us on social media, Instagram, small_takes, Twitter at small takes, Gmail, all the small takes at gmail.com, and Facebook, you can find us on our Facebook page, all the small takes. Let us know what you thought, and we will be back next week, same time, same place.